You are listening to TLRStation.com.
Your Family Matters is a talk radio program with expert information about family law issues and various dispute resolution practices and other services concerning the law and how it relates to your family. Because your family matters. Host Cindy Morin is a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. And now, here is your host, Cindy Morin.
Good afternoon, and welcome to Tenacious Living's radio talk show, Your Family Matters. My name is Cindy Morin, and I'm a family law lawyer with Resolve Legal Group. Your Family Matters is a program brought to you, the listener, about all matters concerning the law and how it relates to your family, because your family matters. Today I have with me Jean Dunbar, who is a registered social worker and play therapist with Jean Dunbar Counseling. Thank you, Jean, for coming today.
Thanks, Cindy.
Now, you're here to talk about reunification therapy. So, can you tell us what reunification therapy is?
Reunification therapy is a therapy that's used when a child's been estranged from a parent, and it's used to help in the process of reuniting the parent and child.
Okay, and in what circumstances would there be a need for reunification therapy? What causes the parents to be estranged from their children in your practice?
Well, in my experience, there's been a number of situations. So, when a child decides that they no longer want to see a parent, that's one. When there's been some kind of interruption. So I've worked with children and parents where parents have been incarcerated. I've worked with parents and children where there's been allegations of abuse, and so the child refuses to see the parent.
Okay. And how long does a parent need to be absent from a child's life before reunification therapy is necessary?
I don't know that there's any set amount of time. Often it's, I've worked with children where it's been 6 months to 8 years. Uh-huh. And it depends on, like, when it's a shorter period of time, it's usually because the child is not comfortable just reengaging with the parent.
Right. And is there any particular age group that you see engaged in this kind of therapy more so than other children?
Well, I've worked with children from age 3 up until 17. So, there is no age. That's primarily the age that you would work with.
So you say that you have worked with children as young as 3 up to age 17, but is there any particular group that you see more often than others? Like, is it the majority of the cases really young preschool children or school age or teenagers? Is there a pattern at all, do you find?
No, there's no pattern. It's depending on the family situation. I think I have probably worked with children and young people around the age of 10 to 15 more frequently.
Okay. So what would a typical course of therapy look like? For instance, would you see both the children together with the parent, or would you see them individually, or would you do a little bit of both? How does it work?
I do a little bit of both. So, typically what I do is see the children first, because, they're usually anxious about this, and I want them to be comfortable with me. And so, depending on what's going on for them, I may see them 2 or 3 times, or I may see them up to 6 or 7 times. And during that time, I prepare them for the upcoming reunification therapy, just letting them know. And I want them to tell me what they need in order to feel comfortable. So we work on that. With the little 3-year-old that I worked with, I did play therapy with her first, because in that instance, we did filial therapy, and I was able to work with her dad around teaching him how to play with her. But she hadn't seen him for 2 years, and she was 4, I think. So she just needed to be really comfortable with me. So again, it's pretty specific to the situation. And once the children are comfortable, then I work with the parent around letting them know, you know, what is their responsibility in this. And that may take two or three sessions because some parents are resistant to that. And then we will come together.
So I have two questions based on what you just told us there. You mentioned filial therapy?
Yes.
And what exactly is that?
Well, filial therapy would be used with young children. And it's actually teaching the parent how to play with the child, because play is the child's natural language when they're three or four. And that's the best way for a parent to attach. So it's fun. I love doing it because I get to teach a parent how to do some similar skills that I do, you know, around just being present in the children's play, just, you know, being empathetic to what's going on to the children and really engaging that way. And it's quite amazing to see how quickly a young child will connect to a parent like that.
Oh.
Yeah.
The other thing I heard you mention was that sometimes parents are resistant to the process. What do you mean by resistance?
Well, like everybody in this process has their own perception of what's gone on.
Right.
So the parent has their perception, the child has their perception. So there has to be a meeting of they both have to come to an understanding of what's happened. But particularly the parent, even though their perception of maybe what's happened that's caused the estrangement is different, has to validate the child's feelings.
Right.
The child has to feel heard in this situation before they're going to fully engage. So it just might, you know, some parents go into this thinking, well, you know, my kid's done this and they have to be punished for this. They have to take responsibility for deciding not to see me. And that will never work.
Right.
That will never work. And I know it's tough for that rejected parent to have to be there, but unless they're going to be there, it's not going to work.
So it's important then for the parent to acknowledge the child's feelings and the child's experience of why the estrangement happened, right, wrong, or otherwise. They need to give that acknowledgement.
They need to give it. Yes, they need to say, I hear you. I can see you're really hurt by that.
Now, is it reciprocated? Do you ever have the children also do that for the parents, or how does that work?
Not usually in the beginning, no. No, because it's usually the child coming in with their perception of what's happened.
Right.
And they, you know, they're so anxious, and that's the first couple of sessions is just around getting everybody comfortable, because it is not comfortable,
right,
you know.
And I'm assuming that, you know, parents obviously have the ability to do that better than children anyways. The children's capacity to kind of see another person's perspective just from their neurological level is probably
right.
Difficult.
Yes, it is. It is. And so I will do things like we do a lot of play even with 8 to 10 year olds, like play games, card games, board games, just to help the kids relax.
Right. So I know it's different for every case that you have, but how many sessions does it usually take before you start to see any sort of progress toward reunification, typically?
Typically. Well, typically I would say 10.
Okay.
We would have to have at least 10 sessions before you're going to see progress. And often within that 10, what I will do if, you know, that all people involved are feeling comfortable, I'll have them do an outing outside of the therapy.
Right.
And then we'll come back and discuss it. And that will just be part of the ongoing therapy then. Part of it will be outside. Then they'll come back and we'll do a session together.
So when you're talking about 10 sessions, does that include the individual sessions as well? Is that part of the piece, or 10 sessions of both the child and the parent kind of interacting together?
10 sessions of the parent and child interacting together. Now, again, that is going to depend on how long
right.
it's been since they've been together.
So I'm assuming that the work that you do through reunification therapy would be confidential in nature. So could you be called as a witness to give feedback on a child custody matter?
I do my best not to. I'm sure that there's always a case where you might be subpoenaed. I'm pretty clear with parents, you know, that I will write a report, and I'm often called upon to write a report on what's happened in the therapy, and that can often be used in court.
And what would you say is a barrier that prevents reunification therapy from being successful?
In my experience, I would say the barrier that I've seen the most is when there's one parent not on board.
So is that necessarily the parent who is trying to reunite with their child, or do you find that's the other parent?
It's the favored parent. It's the parent that the children are with now.
Right.
And, you know, it can be very subtle behaviors that that's giving the children the message that the favored parent is not on board. You know, it's like they come back from a visit and they're exasperated, or they're putting the rejected parent down, and there's some validation of that. That's all it takes.
Right.
Yeah.
And so why do you think that is, like with that particular dynamic? Do you think that when the kids are hearing that, they're trying to please the favored parent, and so they kind of cool off the process, or
that could certainly be part of it, where the child is caught in the middle.
Yeah.
And I've seen that. You know, I've seen where it was a learning for me, because I was doing the reunification counseling and then spending time with the rejected parent afterwards, just coaching. And the young person would leave and give a very different perspective of what had happened. So as a result of that, I just changed the format where I would spend a certain amount of time after the session debriefing with the young person and the favorite parent about what had happened. So there was no misunderstandings when
right.
they left.
And then that way, I would assume it opens up a more honest conversation where
yes.
the child can say how they feel, and then that favored parent actually needs to listen to that as opposed to imposing their own feelings on the child?
Yes, even though that still can happen.
Right.
Yeah.
Interesting. And is it appropriate for a parent to show affection to a child right away after being absent for a period of time?
Well, that's something that I would check with the child when I'm meeting individually with them. And I would also discuss that with the parent, you know, before the reunification counseling happens. Typically, children don't want that to happen. They want to be the one that will initiate any kind of contact.
How does an absent parent explain to a child who they are and why they're now wanting to be a part of the child's life? And I'm thinking more in terms of a parent that's, say, been incarcerated since the child was little. Or is this something that you as a therapist would bring up to the child?
I often don't get into details. And again, this is so specific to the children.
Right.
For young children, you don't have to give a lot of details. You can just say, you know, I know you haven't seen mommy or daddy for quite a while. And, you know, how we've been playing together, now you're going to play with mommy or daddy like you've played with me. Often they're told that by the other parent.
Right. And do you think that's probably the reason why they come in very anxious, because they don't really understand what does all this mean in terms of I've got to now meet this other parent that I'm not really familiar with because my mom or dad told me that that's what's happening?
I don't think it would matter who told them. They're still going to be anxious, because it's typical for children to be a little anxious when they're meeting somebody that they don't know or they don't remember, or there's been a certain amount of conflict.
Right.
Or there could also be feeling like they've done something they shouldn't have done, like saying, I don't want to see this parent.
Right. So how often do you meet with a child and they know sort of too much information about what's going on? Does that occur?
It occurs a lot.
Unfortunately.
Kids
don't get to be kids sometimes in these situations.
No, and it's interesting. When I finally get them to the point, of actually being open and honest with me, because they're still, they still feel like they have to be loyal to maybe one of their parents, that's what I usually hear is, the toughest part of this is feeling like I have to choose one parent over the other.
Right. Generally speaking, do you find it easy to work with, easier to work with the kids or the adults in this kind of therapy? I bet you I could answer that for you, but I want to hear your answer.
Actually, I can work with both.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'm okay. I'm comfortable to work with both. I mean, I've done in my career, of course, working with children is what I specialize in, so that part's easy. And also, I've done tons of parenting in my long career, so I'm quite comfortable with that. And I can coach parents easily on what they need to do. And I've worked with men, women, and children, you know, in very tough situations. So it's actually an exciting kind of work for the most part. There's periods of it that's really frustrating when you know you're so close for this to happen, but it's because of one parent that it's not.
Right. And do you find that the kids are usually more open to the therapy over the adults, or vice versa?
Well,
and I'm not talking about the favored parent. I'm talking about just the...
No, both are... I mean, if you're a parent that hasn't seen your child for 2 years, 4 years, 8 years, for the most part, you're going to do whatever it takes to be involved.
Right.
To be involved. And it's quite exciting for me, because I've had some tough ones, and, you know, some parents that really struggle with showing any kind of feelings at all, to be able to go in and say to their children, you know, I'm going to do anything. I just love you so much. And yes, this is hard for me. I don't talk about feelings well, but I'm going to do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Now, depending on the reason for the initial estrangement between the parent and child, I would imagine that at times there are some risk factors that must be considered. For instance, in a case where there has been physical abuse that's actually occurred, not just allegations, but in cases where we know that there has been some physical abuse, I would suspect that reunification in those situations would be very tricky. So are there any kind of safeguards that you as a therapist put in place to protect anybody who has been abused prior by that parent?
Well, what I want to know from the parent is that what they've done to deal with their own issues around that.
Right.
And in most cases, that's already been dealt with before I see the family. You know, I worked with some, you know, cases where they've been incarcerated. So they've had that risk assessment done before it even gets to in my role as doing the reunification therapy.
So who is it then that retains you? Like, when do you come on board? Because you mentioned that a risk assessment is usually done before you see the parents or children that are involved. What kind of is the process that goes along? Like, how is that risk assessment performed first and then they come to you?
Usually the reunification counseling has been court-ordered.
Okay.
Court-ordered. Or it's kind of ordered by lawyers. Or I work with the children's lawyer. But typically there is an order from the court that is saying reunification counseling now is going to happen. In the case where a parent's been incarcerated, then those are terms of probation.
Right.
Of... okay, you're coming out and you're going to work with your own therapist and they're going to perform a risk assessment to make sure that you're safe with your child. And I'm really clear that I'm not going to do that.
Right.
And then that, when I go to meet with the other parent, I can say, okay, that's not my role. Now, of course, if I see anything, when we're doing the therapy, I will report it. But it's not my role to assess whether he or she is safe to be with that child.
Right. No. So, likewise, I mean, we've talked a bit about physical abuse, but if you're conducting a reunification therapy and there's a concern that one of the parties has a mental illness, is that ever addressed in therapy?
Well, again, it's something that I'm hopeful will be addressed before the parties, you know, start reunification therapy. It isn't always, and unfortunately, that's another barrier.
Right.
You know, that's another barrier. Now, it's not my role to diagnose somebody that's got to say, okay, you've got a mental illness.
Right.
But I'm more likely then to go back to maybe the lawyers and say, this isn't working,
yeah. And
this is why it's not working.
So it's funny that you mention that, because my next question for you is there ever a time when reunification therapy, in your opinion, should not be introduced?
Yes, and it's not like I always know that in the beginning, but there's been some cases where, you know, a child's made a decision not to see a parent, and then I would work with this young person over a period of time. So, you know, there was, you know, one case where the child was clearly having post-traumatic symptoms of witnessing a very violent incident with the parent. And I couldn't get that kid past that, even though, like, we did EMDR. This child just had absolutely no trust that the parent had changed. And quite frankly, I didn't either.
So for the listener, could you explain what EMDR is?
Oh, it's just a therapy to help a child that's, you know, suffered a trauma to kind of put the trauma behind them.
Right.
And, but, you know, it's not going to work if the child feels unsafe.
Right.
And exactly. This child still felt very unsafe.
So part of what I'm hearing from you is that for reunification therapy to be optimally successful, both parties need to feel safe in the process. So you do some individual work ahead of time to make sure that that they do feel safe. Ideally, it would be great to have the preferred parent involved and on board as much as the rejected parent. And that in order for there to be the greatest amount of success, with having all of those parameters in place, that's what's going to set that up for success. And then if one parent, or whether it be the favored parent or the rejected parent, is resistant, that's usually what breaks this whole process down.
Yes.
Or a child that doesn't feel safe.
Right. Or a child that doesn't feel safe, or a parent that isn't really totally supporting the situation. Now, you know, with that parent, I'll meet with that parent.
Right.
And I will say, you know, this isn't working, because I'm sensing and I'm seeing and I'm hearing that you're not fully supporting this. So, and that also will go back to lawyers or a parenting coordinator. I do a lot of work with parenting coordinators.
Right.
And they get to say that.
Yeah. Well, it's interesting that you said that, because that was my next question was, do you ever get involved with the favored parent to try to make that more successful? So thank you for answering that. That's good news.
The other piece that I'm very clear about when I start this is I believe that children need to have relationships with both parents unless there is a huge safety factor that we can't overcome.
Right. So in a case where a child, say, is suffering from post-traumatic stress and can't get past that fear, what would you recommend in a situation like that? Would you recommend that at no time should there ever be reunification therapy, or would you recommend that that child get additional therapy to help them kind of overcome those fears and then maybe revisit it?
That's exactly what I would recommend, that the child continue to work on, you know, healing him or herself. And as well, you know, that the parent continue to do some counseling too.
Right. Yes. So it's not like the door is ever closed at that stage. It's always something that can be revisited. It just depends on how much of the background work, I guess, has been done to get them all prepared for the process.
Right.
Okay. So we talked a little bit before about when somebody's incarcerated, they go and get an assessment and then they get referred on to you and whatnot. But in situations where there hasn't been an incarceration, if parties want to get the reunification process started, how would they go about getting that going? Would they talk to their lawyer about it, or could they call you directly? How does the process work?
I've never been called directly, and I'm thinking that that wouldn't work best. I think that a court order actually is the best way to go, because everybody then has to follow through. And you also have somebody, whether it's lawyers or a parenting coordinator, particularly in high conflict cases, managing those parents, because often that's the hardest part of it all. It's not doing the reunification therapy with the child and the rejected parent, but it's managing the conflict between the other parents, the two parents.
So getting a court order, does that mean that there are times where one person in that trio does not consent to reunification therapy, but it still goes ahead? Or do you need consent from all the parties?
Well, a court order, if they don't consent, it can still go ahead, because the court order says that you can do it. My preference is that that everybody does consent. And with a parenting coordinator, I mean, they will consent with the parenting coordinator also. So it's either the parenting coordinator or the court order.
So in situations where you don't have all parties consent, I would imagine that that makes it more difficult for the process to be successful as well, because they're not really buying into the process.
Exactly.
But it's not impossible, because once they get in there, can they usually see, oh, this isn't what I thought it was going to be? And do you ever see it kind of turn around? And
I have seen it turn around. And I think as I see their child relax and then start to engage with the other parent, then, you know, it's more apt to be successful.
Right. So, Jean, is there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us about reunification therapy today?
Well, I think that it's unfortunate that it's necessary, and it seems to be, you know, kind of this new kind of therapy that's, you know, we have to engage in, because children are making choices that, you know, for whatever reason, that they no longer want to be involved with a parent. And my perspective would say that that's not a good decision to make for a number of reasons, particularly the fact that, you know, yes, there might be some difficulties in the relationship, but when children start avoiding or running away from a relationship with a parent, that's pretty significant. And what kind of template does that form for them around being in further difficult relationships? So that's what I try to express to both parents, is that, do you want to set your kid up to run away from relationships? And both parents have a lot to offer. So let's teach them how to work through this relationship.
Right. Mm-hmm. Great. Well, thank you very much for coming in today and explaining all of this to us, because it is something that I see more and more occur in my practice, unfortunately, as you said. And it's nice to kind of get an idea of what goes on and what the process is, so that our listeners can get a better understanding of reunification therapy, because anything that's got the name therapy attached to it seems pretty scary. So I want to thank Jean Dunbar for being a part of our show today. If our listeners want to find out more about reunification therapy, is there any place that you can kind of direct them to find that information?
Well, I think, you know, you can get all kinds of information on the internet.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. And if you want to find out more about our guest or our firm, Resolve Legal Group, please visit our website at www.resolvelegalgroup.com or by calling 1-866-RESOLVE. And please be sure to listen to our show next week, when we will be speaking with Provincial Court Judge Nancy Flatters on the issue of judicial settlement conferencing.
Your Family Matters is sponsored by Resolve Legal Group, a family law firm dedicated to client-centered holistic legal services, with offices located downtown Calgary and downtown Cochrane, Alberta. The unique delivery of client-centered holistic services that Resolve Legal Group has become known for is structured to address not only a client's legal matter, but this model also ensures that families are bridged with differing community supports based on an individual's and family needs. It is the firm's philosophy that with the right supports in place, clients become empowered to make sound legal decisions when files are led to resolution. It is the firm's desire to continue to grow and expand this model so that holistic practice becomes the norm in family law rather than the exception. Contact us at 403-229-2365 or visit www.resolvelegalgroup.com for more information.